I'm delighted to welcome a very wonderful panel to talk about the film and to talk about what is at the heart of the film, which is this extraordinary use of this footage that, as we're told often through the film, is the footage of the voices of 1,001 Syrians. And sitting at the end is Zaha Al-Marin, who is from Syria, who's a documentarist and a researcher and editor. Next to him is Dima Saba, who's from Lebanon originally, and she's an expert in Arab digital media. And sitting next to me is Amar Garbea, who's an Egyptian blogger and also a human rights activist. I think one of the reasons why I asked whether people have seen it before is because for me it was the second time seeing it tonight, and I had a very different response. The first time I saw it, I felt completely shocked by the brutality of the imagery. And watching it a second time, what I was shocked again, but it was the poetry of the film and the artistry of the film, because it feels like a love letter to Syria, actually. I just wonder, Zaha, I should also add that the filmmaker, Osama Mohammed, is a friend of Zaha's and was his teacher in Syria. I don't know how many times you've seen it, Zaha, but I'm wondering whether your response changes each time you see it. You need a mic.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Jill. Thank you so much for having me here. Every time I saw this film, maybe I saw it for 10, maybe 12 times now, it's the same impression, just shocked me again and again and again, with the poetry sense it has, with the reality it has, with a strong perspective of reality by Osama and Simad as well. I think this film is like an intensive way of saying what's going on in Syria. Mm. And politically speaking, from a human rights perspective, from daily life of the normal people. And for this season, I think if maybe Melu also, she saw the film twice, maybe we'll ask her a question about the second time as well, because maybe I'm into the film, maybe she's a little bit outside the cinema field. Also, it's interesting to know more.
It's very much an autobiography. It's a memoir, isn't it, of a very personal response.
Yes.
And you, Amma, you lived through the very first uprising of all of the uprisings in Egypt. And I'm very interested to know what your feelings were in watching that film for the first time.
Confusing. It's I'm one of the people who have been fortunate enough to have been part of the dynamic that became known as the Arab Spring from before, a few years before that, but also I was lucky enough to be immersed in the whole experience in those critical few months and years. And having watched this, I began, I asked myself the same questions that I've been asking myself since that time, because I'm sort of in a similar situation, but I think that
to the director,
to someone who has access to all this kind of material, in 2 days, 3 days following the big confrontation with the police in Egypt, and people who have finally started arriving to Tahrir Square, where it came known to be as the first major sit-in, realized. Me and a few others, that there would be a lot of information that needs to get out, and the internet is being shut down by the Mubarak kill switch, and there we are. We know how to handle these things more than most people, so what we've done is that we've pitched a tent, and we've had a banner on that tent saying we collect material, and people came with us, like these people who uploaded things to YouTube. They came with us with material on their USB sticks and on their cameras and on their SD cards from their cameras, and I've dumped that on my laptop.
Can I just ask, at that point when they were doing that, were they doing that simply because they just knew instinctively they had to get this down? This had to be documented for history, for witness, for testimony. Do you think people at that point were able? It was just, or was it just an immediate instinct? This is clearly history. This is revolution. We have to get this down.
But my obsession at the time, it wasn't even called the revolution, but it's still 3 days on into it. But my obsession at the time was that this information is valuable. The world needs to know what's happening, and there I am sitting with tens of gigabytes of material. There was no internet. Later on, this archive that later became housed in an internet in a media collective that I had found, it's called the Mosserini Media Collective, later had other values to them, perhaps historical, documentary, and maybe even artistic in the future. We haven't really been touching that archive so far, 5 years into it, for reasons related to privacy, safety of people, anonymity, and our own perception. We are still so immersed in what happened.
So no one in Egypt has, that you're aware of, Egyptian filmmakers haven't done a similar thing with Og?
People have made their own impressions and their own interpretations of the experience that we went through, and my own personal opinion is that it's a bit too early, especially for someone who has been so much involved.
A bit too early for who?
A bit too early for me to understand and to appreciate and to read, to have a reading of what we are going through and be able to interpret that. And
But that's an artistic response, isn't it? I mean, it's
poetic, yeah.
Dima, can I ask you about where were you during the period of obviously the Egyptian uprising and then Syria? Where were you in the world?
I was in Paris.
Okay.
I was writing my PhD on sort of trying to understand how we went in the Arab world from pan-Arab nationalism to political Islam to extremely extreme Islam.
Yes.
I have to say I can feel with every single person in the room about it, just what just happened, because I'm sorry I didn't share this violence, because I did actually choose to not see the film for the third time, so we just came in the last 20 minutes, but I've seen it twice already, and so I do understand that there's something I really like, and someone, my ex, like advisor, wrote something about the where an image hurts and it leaves a trace that never goes away. And I do know that there's everyone in this room was hurt in places that never go away. But like war is war, and it does that. So I'm sorry about what you just had to go through from an ethical perspective. But I think, in a way, we're going to have time to discuss it, but in a way it's important that people know that if you've never lived in a war, this is how it's like to be in a war. And that's documentary, and that's the part of reality that's very true. Now, where I was learning to put the distance between myself and the spectacle of my own people's death. And it's taken me a long time to be able to put this distance. And when I watch this now, I watch it from a completely different perspective than how I'd watch it 5 or 10 years ago. So I share homes, lost in front of this much violence, and I'm not sure what to do with it. I feel it's just fell on my head. And I feel like I've got some responsibility, I have to do something about it, but I'm not really sure. That was my initial response to the film when I first saw it.
And I'm just wondering, Daha, you were in Syria when the uprising started, and we see that fantastic footage at the start of that those early days of people running down the street and calling freedom. And were you out there with your camera? Were you filming?
Yeah, of course, but I was filming using my mobile phone camera, actually. We didn't recognize the whole situation in the beginning of the revolution back in 2011, March 2011, and we never dealt with ourselves. We are recording the history or recording or keeping the audiovisual documents for the future. And maybe because we thought it's a couple of weeks, couple of months, and everyone will be back, and everyone will enjoy what he did, like what happened in Egypt, maybe, and before Sicily, of course. However, yes, I did some filming back in Syria during the demonstration, and the I would like to shed a light on something really interesting, that these audiovisual documents used by the documentarist, by artist, by researcher, by human rights activist, and with the security forces in Syria, because they used these documents to sentence anyone who participate in the revolution. And this is what happened with me, actually. 27th of March 2011, they arrested me in the demonstration, and I tried to ignore I was there. But suddenly, in the officer office, there was like a big screen, similar maybe to this one size, and he showed a video uploaded on YouTube by someone else about these. Maybe 2 hours after the demonstration, I participated in, and he said, "Look, you said you didn't participate in this demonstration, but who is that who's appeared on the screen?" From that point, we start like shooting from behind a little bit, ignoring showing any faces, using signs as a references for time and places, because also the media of the regime keep ignoring that anything going on inside Syria. So things change, of course, now, or even after the first 6 months, let's say, in Syria, and what became now the history or the audiovisual history of the Syrian revolution never didn't happen to shoot it or film to be a history. Otherwise, maybe I would use another way, or using different quality, or using different perspective. The only thing we were after when we are filming was mobilization and sending this material to media, to, because there is no correspondence on the field.
But that must have changed.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. So obviously what we're looking at is something that is uniquely of our time. Obviously people have filmed for decades and decades and decades, and I remember someone telling me that in 1989, with the beginning of the fall of communism, people were filming and then taking the film around Czechoslovakia to show everyone, which was the kind of prehistoric way of doing it. But you know, people have been obviously thinking in the same way, but now it can be done in this unprecedented way. So it raises all sorts of, as well as giving this incredible opportunity for testimony, for documentary, for, you know, whether it's for future war crimes trials, for an artist, a filmmaker like Osama, but a lot of issues come with it too, which you've touched on, Anna, in terms of the archive that you have. So some of the things that might have gone through your heads as you were watching the footage, perhaps, is who are these people? Do they know that their faces and their film is being shown in this footage? Are they alive? If they're alive, could this be dangerous for them? How do we know that it's authentic? How do we know that it's not faked? A million questions will come, and I'm just, you've touched on it already. You said it's too early, so too early for a film like the one we've just seen?
Too early to reflect, at least, I think. Artistically, and I'm so far removed from being a filmmaker myself. I'm a techie, and I do human rights. But there is definitely other value to such content, and it's at least in my mode of operation, it's closer to journalism, it's closer to even propaganda and agitation. And this is exactly what we have done in the period 2011-2012, even up to 2013. But the videos that we have used were videos that we have personally shot from battles with the, let's say, the police, the riot police, downtown Cairo, following the initial massive demonstrations. So these are things that we have shot ourselves, we have verified, we have taken time to expose anyone, because we know that definitely a counter-revolution is pushing back, and obviously, as we know now, things may turn sour. But the initial archive, which is again shot by people who were there with less sophisticated equipment and perhaps with less readiness to what they are going to face, but from a much wider perspective, much more condensed time, it has a lot of historical value. It still hasn't been tackled because we're still grappling with these questions, and I know that in a Syrian context, the dangers and the problems are even much more, because it's practically a war zone out there. So does it have immediate value, journalistic value, or human rights value? Totally. Does it have a political value as propaganda and agitation material? Yes. And that has served to change the discourse of the media. So you push this to the mainstream media, just like the dynamic between the social media, the bloggers, and the mainstream larger media has always been, at least in our experience in Egypt. We influence the news agenda. We make the news by forcing, in more than one way, these issues on the larger discussion that's taking place in newspapers and on television.
Dima, does it trouble you that we have so many questions that go through our heads when we're watching this kind of footage?
Yes. it's very difficult to. Who are we in the little comfort of our very safe offices and countries to speak at these people who are there? But someone needs to do it. So, and somehow, as I was saying, I had to learn to put this distance between me and the things I'm working on. And there are a lot of issues, I think, that are problematic about the 90 minutes that we just seen in terms of ethical practice of filmmaking and how the democratization of image production, the fact that anyone could shoot anything and put it up, has completely changed the way we think of consent, of representation, of vulnerability, of graphic images, and of the value of graphic images, and how graphic it is, and for whom exactly, and whose history, and whose memory. So like thousands of questions. But again, I think not to undermine the, as Amr was saying, the journalistic value of what we've seen. This has happened. The filmmaker hasn't made things up. This footage is real. It's real because I know him personally, and I know he wouldn't. People who don't know him in the room should trust the institution that these films represent and say that they're worthy now in terms of verification, in terms of fact-checking, in terms of a little bit of context of where we are, when, who shot this film, why. Why am I told all this violence? And again, I go back to this, what do you want me to do with it? Where do you want me to take it and do what with it exactly? I think we're left with a lot of unanswered questions, and we're faced with so much horror and so much violence that we are torn between, now I know, what do you want me to do with it? Where do I take this?
But I sort of wonder, does it matter, I mean, just to throw the ethics out the window, does it matter that we have so many questions? Isn't that the point? And if you think about the great, great war photography, which in the same way, as you were saying earlier, is indelibly in our minds forever. Perhaps one of the most famous in the world is the photograph, there is the photograph of the little girl, famously from the Vietnam War, running down the road, naked, crying. Did the photographer ask for her consent? I don't think so. And that's always been an issue for war photographers. I remember actually many, many years ago interviewing Don McCullen, who's one of our most famous war photographers, famously filmed the Lebanese Civil War. And I remember he said to me, I always ask for the consent of the atmosphere, is what he said. And then he told me this story of how, for the first time and only time in his career, he took a photograph of a woman in Beirut whose house had just been bombed, and she attacked him. And it was the only time that had happened. So I'm just wondering, is this the modern version of what the war photographer has always had to face? And is what matters the impact that it has in the end, the impact that this film has?
I'm going to let you say a bit. I'm just very quickly. Of course, we can't ask consent from everyone we're taking a picture with. And of course, there's issues connected with war reporting, and I'm talking about taking images of war and putting them in the political economy of a human rights film, and taking that film to a Western audience, and then taking this film to film festivals. And so I'm throwing out questions about who is it made for? Who did Osama have in mind when he first made this film? Was it made for Syrians? Was it made for Western audience? And I'm not saying these are mutually exclusive at all, but I'm just throwing out all these ethical questions, not to just focus on consent, but to say, at a time where the democratization of image production and dissemination has made it possible for so much misinformation, so much fake news to come out on YouTube, and that fake news, and specifically Syria, is completely delegitimizing the alternative and citizen narrative. The fact that people could just shoot things and put them out there was the real. But because of fake news, this has become, that narrative has lost of its value. What I'm saying is there is a danger, at least, of taking footage from, as he says, 1,001 Syrians that are out there and making our own story of it.
I mean, I suppose one of the issues here is obviously there is an issue about fake news and verification and not wanting people to be misled. But there's also the question of artistic license, isn't there? And can an artist, does an artist have more license than a journalist?
No, of course not. And it's kind of impossible in the Syrian context. I mean, we are talking about maybe so far more than almost million videos uploaded on YouTube from Syria, and uploaded by some people who killed or disappear or being a refugee or just you don't know who they are. And if you want to go through the traditional production procedure, you have to ask everyone about every video, who shot it and where and why, and having a confirmation from him or a license from him. Otherwise, in this case, we will have no safer water, no return to homes, no other films. It will happen in the future, I'm sure, based on this YouTube video from Syria. I think I don't want to open an ethical conversation about this, because this is really complicated and this is really endless. I think for myself, I believe this is a collective movement. This is a demonstration, and maybe 4, 5, 10 million Syrians being involved in this demonstration or that demonstration or this uprising or that. And they participate in the event. Someone chose to participate in the same event by shooting or filming and uploading on YouTube. It doesn't, his contribution doesn't make him own the event itself. He owned, of course, the audiovisual material, but the event itself happened outside his control. In other words, without this movement, without this action, this audiovisual document never exists. And I think we are talking about also the whole population. It's not something small. I mean, some of the videos Osama showed in this film viewed by 5, 10, 15, 25 person on YouTube, and it's really nice and beautiful in terms of artistically speaking, and also in terms of politics and shedding a light on what's going on in Syria. Without Osama, no one maybe will know about these videos. Yeah. And it's on YouTube. Mm. What he did is just highlight it, make it, put it in context, and he, I think, keep the personal perspective that obvious to ignore any ethical question. He never said this is the filmers or the filmmakers' perspective who did the footage or who shoot the footage at the first place. No, this is my perspective based on their YouTube videos. Mm. And he was totally obvious about that.
And I think also what comes across in the film is that this is a man in exile. This is a man who's suffering from not being in Syria, and that this is his solution in a way as a filmmaker, isn't it?
Exactly.
I'm just wondering about when considering this discussion and this film, how will you know when it's time for your own archive?
My initial instinct, and it's not up to me anymore. I'm not an active part of that collective any longer. I'm just a founder, and I'm trying to support as much as I can. But I think the discussion is happening just about now, 5 years later, 5 years into it, when we have seen an ebb and a flow and then an ebb again, and collectively we have gone through an experience that we realize now that we are in this for probably the rest of our functioning lives. this is for each country, there's a liberation they have to sacrifice, and this has to be us. Only very recently that we are beginning to look into how to organize this material, how to verify as much as we can, how we can finally sit collectively, those of us in exile, and those of us voluntary or not, and those of us who are in Egypt, and try to make sense internally, but also find our own narrative, because before then it would have been too immature of us to just go out and tell a narrative that we may change our opinion about a few months later when politics changed again. And we have changed our own narrative, how we see what we are going through, most of us at least. So I think a few years into it is good enough, and we're just about to do that, I think.
I just want to give you a chance to ask questions, as I'm sure you have some. I think. Yes. Okay. Do you want to? I'm sure that you'll be answering questions.
You just touched on the issue of exile, and it does sit in very much the perspective of an exile dealing with that, and particularly at the moment where he wants Brianna to leave, and he questions his own motives as to why Olivia wants her to leave, so that she will also be in exile, and not to make him feel bad about not being there. And I wondered what that feels like, and what you all, you know, as you're all here now, how do you feel about that, and what your responsibility is in terms of being witnesses or where you should be and so on? Does the film still speak to you about that?
Well, it's a difficult question. Yeah, for me the film, it's really reflect what I think, and apparently nothing changed since the film released in terms of the amount of military intervention in Syria now. I mean, it's worse and worse, of course, but the blood is still ongoing. It's bloodshed, I mean, it's ongoing. And for me as an artist also, I don't have any other way to express myself. It's not easy to be here, of course, looking to the open massacre that happened inside Syria. To be honest, it's outside our hands. We are trying to do our best. We are trying to express what we believe in, the film has done it very well. But nothing gonna change through art and culture, unfortunately, in Syria. We all know that.
I'm in a very privileged position because there's no ongoing civil war in my own country. So until the 2011 Arab uprising, the heritage of the Lebanese civil war was this thing that hunts Lebanese people who are outside, and they ask you, are you first world generation, are you second world generation, have you lived the war, which year? So somehow I am in this place where all of a sudden is actually someone else's war, and I can just sit there and watch it. And I, from my own personal perspective, I've always felt more Syrian than Lebanese, and I'm spending lots of time in Syria and being the country I would love to be from. But, there is a guilt about just being in a very comfortable and very safe place, and I, this is the one of the few things I was completely able to identify with the film, is all those we know who are there and us who are just watching, and there's something about the spectacle again that is kind of scary about it. But I'm very lucky that my loved ones are actually, the Lebanese ones are safe.
Me? I have no guilt. I started my engagement with public affairs in exile, in a sense, on the internet, where was the only open and public space available 10, 12 years ago. More or less. So for me, it's a question of where you can one be safe, of course, because this is something that's necessary, but also what it can be most effective. If we have to be on the periphery, and if we have to be more disengaged to have a better vision, or have to have even better impact, then so be it.
That's the techie. That's the techie. Any more questions?
Is just a kind of response to the film and your discussion. I thought the film was fantastic. I found it very despite the content being so traumatizing and distressing, I also thought it was a really beautiful piece of work. And I suppose I was thinking about, in terms of your discussion, and I used to be a foreign correspondent for the BBC. I don't say that as something to boast about at all, in some ways I'm quite ashamed of it. I certainly don't feel that what I know of sort of official foreign correspondents, that they necessarily apply ethics or don't themselves create fake news. I mean, I could sit here and list fake, you know, sort of false stories or false films that are made. So, when I watched this film, I didn't actually sit here. I was thinking, God, is this, am I just too hardened? I didn't sit here with loads of questions. I sat here completely absorbed and feeling kind of grateful that there was this film that gave me an opportunity to sort of think and reflect and empathize with this sort of appalling situation. I felt really sort of drawn in, and I liked the poetry of it, and I loved the fact that it was going between kind of France here and there, you know, between safe countries, you know, relatively safe Western Europe and Syria, this kind of going in and out, and I thought it was fabulous. And the ethics are important, but I think I feel having moved further and further away from journalism and more into kind of artistic responses to all that, that's the way forward, you know, more, we need more of this stuff. I really do, I thought it was great.
Thank you.
Again, not sure this is a question or a statement, but I really enjoyed the film. And there are two journalists out there. House, we don't know this. This is the only route. This is all we've got. And I guess the film and all the media and YouTubes are really going to be tested in the future. That's when possibly people will be able to account.
Anyone else?
Can I say something to this?
Sure, sure.
I think it's problematic if this is all we know. if we are where we are in the world with everything that's out there for us to know more, and cinema is all we know about real wars, then it's really, it is a problem. Because this is what I agree in the fact that our mainstream media doesn't really tell us. But there's so many ways for us to know more. This is my main worry, is this romanticization of the war and this putting these aesthetics on footage that we don't know who shot it, we don't know where and when. And I hear what you're saying, and I, of course, I understand and I agree partly, but I kept asking, what's in it for those people who are being shot in this film? What's in it for the dead and for the living? What are they getting out of it? Is this narrative theirs? Is it forced out of them? Is it enough that now there's a Western audience that knows about this for it to make, to be a valid piece of history? So if only what cinema is telling us about what's going out there is all we know, I think it's really problematic.
But I suppose I would sort of answer to that very often we stop looking at the news, we stop seeing it, it stops hurting us, and that is where art can play such an important role, which I think this film does. It comes and slaps you in the face about Syria. If you'd stopped thinking about Syria, boy, this starts you thinking about Syria again. But also I think what's so extraordinary about it is that it is about exile, it is about the individual filmmaker, but it's also about cinema and about film and about storytelling. It's a very, there are multiple layers to the film, and the whole sort of references to 1001 and the tales of the 1001 series in the film. So I take your point, but I also think
we spent 50 years trying to undo the 1001. Like, we spent the last 50 years, 100 years, trying to undo the orientalizing ways of depicting the Arab world, and the 101 is something we really need to move beyond. Again, I'm like the devil's advocate here.
Have you got my microphone after this?
But say you.
But what I would also say about the 1001 Nights, I totally get that it is one of the greatest works of literature ever written. And there is a theory, there's a great, great British writer, some of you might know, give me one sec, called Robert Irwin, who's one of the great, he's a great sort of medieval scholar of Arabic. Mm. And he's a great expert on the 1001 Nights. And his theory is that the Western novel, not only the Western novel comes from 1001 Nights, but science fiction, surrealism, all of it comes to 1001 Nights. So yeah, anyway, I'll shut up. There's the question.
Does anyone want to respond quickly to this point? Everyone.
All right.
Hello. I wanted to make a comment as well about the point you're making. You have a problem about focusing on the artistic value of the footage, because this is an ongoing problem, ongoing events right there. And our role, I don't know how ethical would it be to not focus on what we can do practically, but focusing on what the film makes us feel. It's not about our feelings, I would think. So what you said about being in a public space, which is the internet, and contributing from there, but being dislocated from the real events. I think it's all about, as an activist, positioning at the moment. So be it, as you said. If you're out there, you can reach your wider audience rather than going and demonstrating in Syria. If you can pass the message to Western audience in here, it's something amazing, and it's all because of this new public sphere, which is the internet. But again, what does that practically make us want to do? Do we, after watching the film, do we just have a nice evening and feel upset, or do we actually want to do something about, let's say, refugee crisis?
My comment has been on how I feel about being here now, and if it makes me feel any guilty to be away. No, not whatsoever. But my escape from this debate, being capable of doing that because I'm a techie, is that I interest myself more into making available of the material and making sure that it's there, the best quality in an open format, in an open archive, available for everybody, as verifiable and as documented as much as I can, and then leave it up to you guys to make whatever you want to do out of it. If you want to make poetry out of it, so be it. If you want to make a news story out of it, then again, it's your choice. Easy.
I think that the question of what we do with this, I think it's very, very important. And my own experience with this, I was, and Zahar knows, I was given an archive from Daraa, which is the city where the revolution started in 2011, exactly 2 years ago, 12,758 videos. And I've spent the last 2 years watching this material that was shot by five people. So the story we hear is a story of a lot of Syrians, a lot of families. And each one in exile today had this one person who was on Skype. And we hear, when I hear the noise of Skype, I know exactly what that means. What I'm trying to say is one of the main issues working with this footage was asking these kind of questions. I'm not asking them completely outside of Syria. I'm asking them because I absolutely need, for my mental sanity, everyone else who's involved in the work I'm doing, that when people watch it, do something about it, beyond just being really hurt by the violence and just being like, I need to look elsewhere because this is way too violent for me to do something about it. So it's almost like Syria's become Palestine. It's become about oranges and Yaffa and Keys. But as we speak, Israel is changing the names of Palestinian streets, and people still draw pottery jars, cake, keys held by old women, and oranges. So the questions I'm asking about ethics is not to undermine the testimonial value of this archive, which screams reality and horror, but actually, what do we do with it? What is this film making us do? And I think your point is really...
So I'm very curious about your archive that you have from Daraa. What are you going to do with it? How are you going to show it? And are you ever going to show it in a straight-up documentary way? What I think one of the problems with verification is that, you know, you can see this horrific footage that would be shown on the New York Times website. And afterwards they would say, we can't verify this. So somehow what we're seeing of real people dying or bloodied or whatever, being barrel bombed, is not really true. Because a Western journalist or a Western editor, they're not able to say that, well, we know, we can't put our corporate news organization behind this.
And verify.
So I think that also muddied the waters about the opinions about Syria. Now, when you're also saying one other thing, you're saying, well, do people go home and feel, you know, go out for dinner? I think that there are many people in the room who have been working on Syria who have projects and have devoted a lot of time to Syria. So when you talk about these Western audiences or what it's for, you give the impression that this film is really for entertainment. I've been to a couple of film festivals where this film is shown. But this isn't really a popular film. This is a difficult film. But as I get back to, around to my question about your archive that you've been working on, how will you show it or what are your plans for it?
There's like lots of questions there. I absolutely did not say this film was for entertainment. I said this film is made for, so it's a social justice film that's made for human rights film festivals.
I took offense, I think, at the way that you're referring to Western audiences. I think the film is made for...
I think this film is made for a Western audience because it is how it's... I think what the filmmaker made with this film is how this footage was taken and how the aesthetics of telling this narrative of this film is packaging it in a way that fits a political economy of the film festival. There's nothing wrong with doing that, of course. And you're perfectly right to ask, what am I doing with mine? The reason why the film isn't done yet and it's been 3 years that we're working and mapping this archive, is specifically because my first question is, I'm not sure how to deal with the graphic and the violence of the images. I'm really worried about what do I do with the violence. And the second one is, we've had issues with ownership and authorship of the archive. We've had Syrian activists contact us, other Daraa activists who are now in Jordan, now in Turkey, say, you've got our archive, this is ours. We gave it to people 5 years ago, but now we want it back. So the question of ownership and authorship that we're faced with today with this archive, although some of it is on YouTube, not all of it, although most of it is made public on the public domain, people are coming back and claiming ownership of this footage. So that even if we don't want to acknowledge, the value of this archive is changing with time. The testimonial and historic value that it had 5 years ago is today completely different. And the reality of the political economy in a human rights festival, I'm trying to protect the archive from the producer I'm working with, because it is a producer who's great, but who's actually based in Europe, who's used to this kind of economy, who abides by specific rules, who the costs of making the film. So there are so many things connected with, you've given this material and you have to do something with it. So all I'm saying is that while it is very easy to imagine how these films end up going around the world in the human rights film festivals, it is important, in my opinion, to keep asking the question of what's in it for the people who are shot? What are they getting? Are they sharing the monetary value that this film is making from the prizes they won? Have they been asked whether they want to be in there or not? And these are the kind of questions we're asking. So basically, yes, I am looking at tracing back the author of every single video I'm working with right now, and only using the ones I know who shot them, and I know they're giving me consent for. That is to answer the question about what I'm doing with it.
We've just got time probably for two or three very short questions. So if you've got a question to ask, thank you.
I would just like to ask each of you, you three, because obviously you have an incredibly unique perspective, and I think a lot of the things that we've just been discussing now that are obviously very heated come from the very heated thing that we just watched, and also the very heated perspective that you speak from. We're obviously in a very specific context right now, so just to address what you said about effects, I think it's less important that we're offended and more important that we listen, because I think that's what the film is telling us to do, is to watch and listen with basically open eyes and open hearts. Sorry, go around me. Basically, I would like to know, given the context that we're in, the refugee crisis, a Europe which is less and less friendly to the people that we've just watched being killed and murdered, I would just like to know your, not necessarily kind of academic, but personal responses to the film in that context.
Joe, could we perhaps take the three questions? There were three members of the audience who were very, very keen to have their say. Could we maybe allow them to have their say, and then you respond to those questions as a series?
We could, but we've had this one, so let's just take that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's difficult from my perspective to look into this film from in the context of the refugee. A refugee crisis became popular because it touched the European countries. Let's be clear about that. And the essential problem is there, what the film reflects, to be honest. I mean, most of the maybe far, well, most of the people think why the refugees came to the to Europe. This is the answer for me. We didn't leave Syria because we have economic issue there. No, it's a matter of live or die. But I would like to look into the artistic value of this document. More than the political, economic context, to be honest. There is a very strong personal point of view in this film, there is very artistic and avant-garde for me point of view. And I can't imagine doing a film about First World War or Second World War and asking every person a permission. Well, it's different context, it's different situation now, but this is kind of impossible. And I am an artist at the end, not a journalist, not an academic. And I can understand Dima point of view, but it's not applied on me or any artist. I mean, if I can find on YouTube, in the Syrian context, a very strong, artistically speaking, again, a very strong piece of video, I'm gonna use it in my film. And I'm not gonna be ashamed. I'm not gonna be asking myself, where, who, he? No, the blood is blood. And for this reason, unethical, as I said earlier, is very complicated, endless. And looking into the film from different perspective, from journalism perspective, from a human rights perspective, from refugee crisis perspective, from very emotional perspective, from industrial perspective, this response, this multi-response reflect the layers of the film. It has and it raises issues about the new cinema, about new politics, about new audiovisual documents, about ethical questions. For this reason, it's a good film for me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other question? There's one, and then, yeah, and then.
This has been way more comments.
Sorry, we're running out of time, so yes. Really, can you keep it short and try and make it a question?
And I understand why you're bringing up all the complexity and why you're talking about why you're too early for a certain reflection, but there's another way in which it seems to me it's almost, in a sense, this film comes too late, because it seems that about the war that is ongoing, it's primarily a question of mobilization, as you said. My personal experience watching it was one of outrage and helplessness and wordlessness in the face of essentially a war that, at least in its origins, was fundamentally simple between a people that wanted to topple the regime and a regime that brutalized and attacked its people. And that was the essential dynamic in 2011, and it still seems to me remains, despite all the perversions and distortions that have happened since, the ongoing dynamic. And it poses the question, like artistic responses to, say, the Spanish Civil War did in, you know, at the time, 1936-37, of what is it that we can do to help win the war?
Thank you.
Respond to that?
Yeah.
I'm only Egyptian, and I know very little about the conflict in Syria, and dare not really comment on it extensively. But in my own experience, when there's a citizen journalist standing in the morgue in Cairo and shooting a video of a mother and the dead body of her recently killed son, the first thing that she wants you to do is to take this image and show it to the world and get something changed. To me, again, being only me, maybe perhaps a bit more practical than I'd like to be, this means to me more journalism and agitation than perhaps an artistic expression.
Okay, thank you. A mic.
Together. Two, three quick things. To begin with, about faking, you can fake a narrative, you can fake a discourse, but it's very difficult to fake an image, and I think this is sort of the credibility of something like that was fake. It's very difficult to fake. And I do understand the complexities of actually putting things together that do not have authorship, but this is a question that has to do with ICT in general, information communication technologies, and belongs to a larger, you know, discourse about who owns what, especially with social media platforms nowadays. I think what you're trying to say here, let's not make this a dangerous habit, but an exceptional measure in that context, which is understood. Apart from that, there is also a very critical point of view about working forms like that is a matter of perspective and who is involved in what and in what way, because it does pull the out to actually review a couple of things, but also there's not well, they're very completely. So there's a lot more to discuss on the film artistically and ethically, but for the time being, that's.
Thanks. Is everyone to
respond? I agree.
Okay.
I disagree.
You disagree? Okay, John, good.
Well, I think.
You said what you said before.
No, I didn't say that before.
Why are you disagreeing?
I didn't.
Artistically.
Well, looking into this, it's a complicated film.
Yes.
But the point is that our response to this kind of film affected by the tradition of cinema. This kind of film need different and more open perspective to look into, to be honest. I mean, we are all the time judging this film and also other films that came from Syria lately, maybe, from very traditional and traditional perspective in terms of industrial cinema. This is an ethical complication. Yes, we know that. It is problematic. Yes, we know that. But it's different. It's a new. We need a new set, to be honest, of rules, of tradition, maybe, to see this film. And we are trying all the time to raise a question about artistic value, about what
but
it takes time.
Okay,
we're going to,
yeah.
It's very bad as an exceptional measure, but I'm trying to say something that make it a dangerous habit in other aspects of actually circulating information. But for this...
Yeah, sorry, we're going to... I don't think we can carry this on as a dialogue at the moment.
Okay.
Sorry, we're going to have to... Yeah. But this has been a completely fascinating discussion, and I'd really like to thank Shahini Chowdhury for inviting us to see the film and inviting us to discuss it, because it is a conversation that clearly needs hours and hours and hours. And I'd very much like to thank our three panellists, Saha Omari, Dima Saba, Amar Gabeya, and